You are planning a cross-country. You pull up your sectional, trace out your route, and somewhere between your departure and destination you see it. A chunk of airspace labeled with a name like Falcon or Viper or Powder River, followed by the letters MOA, and your first thought is probably something like, "Can I fly through that? I'm Pattern on Traffic, Pattern Radio Hangar." Today, we are going to work through this from the ground up, because if you have been fuzzy on what a military operations area actually is, what it means when one is active, and what you need to do before you cross that boundary, this is the episode to get locked in on. Before we dig in, a quick word from our friends at AviationSoul.com. They make challenge coins for every step of the aviation journey. First solo, private pilot certificate, instrument rating, commercial, they have a coin for every milestone. A great way to mark the moments that actually matter in this journey. Check them out at AviationSoul.com. Now let's set the stage. Special use airspace is one of those topics that appears on every private pilot written exam, comes up again on the oral, and then somehow manages to stay blurry in pilots' heads for years after they get their certificate. Part of the reason is that we memorize the definitions without really understanding the why behind each category. So let me start at the beginning, walk through every type, and then spend real time on the one that trips up cross-country pilots more than any other, the Federal Aviation Administration, or FAA, recognizes several distinct categories of special use airspace. Prohibited areas, restricted areas, military operations areas, warning areas, alert areas, and national security areas. Each one is different. Confusing them will cost you on your check ride oral, or worse, in actual airspace. Prohibited areas carry a P designation on your sectional. P-40 is over the White House in Washington, D.C. P-56 covers portions of the airspace over the Capitol itself. When you see a P designation on your chart, that airspace is completely off limits to civilian pilots. Full stop. There is no clearance that opens it. There is no air traffic control routing that takes you through it. You do not fly there. Restricted areas carry an R designation. These require air traffic control authorization before you enter. Restricted areas might contain aerial gunnery, artillery firing, missile testing, or flight activity that poses a real hazard to uninformed traffic. When a restricted area is not active, the controlling agency can release it to air traffic control, and ATC can route civilian traffic through it. But you never assume a restricted area is open. You always confirm. Warning areas carry a W designation. These are mostly offshore over international waters. They look and feel a lot like restricted areas in terms of what might be happening inside. High-performance military aircraft, weapons activity. The difference is that because warning areas sit over international waters, the FAA does not have the same legal authority to restrict civilian flight that it has over domestic airspace. But the name is honest. If a warning area is active, the hazards inside it are real alert. Areas carry an A designation. These mark locations with a high volume of pilot training or unusual aerial activity. A busy flight school doing constant touch and goes, parachute operations, civilian aerobatics. You can legally fly through an alert area without any clearance, but the name tells you something. Be alert. Keep your head on a swivel. National security areas, marked NSA on the chart, are technically voluntary. The FAA requests, not requires, that pilots avoid them. They typically sit over sensitive infrastructure, things the people in charge would rather not have aircraft circling over at low altitude. Now, let's talk about the military operations area. The single most important thing to understand about a MOA is this. It is not prohibited. It is not restricted. A pilot operating under visual flight rules, a VFR pilot, can legally fly through a military operations area at any time without an ATC clearance. But legal and smart are two very different things, and this is where the real conversation begins. When a MOA is active, what is happening inside it? Military flight training, and not the gentle kind, combat maneuvering, aerobatics, high G turns formation flying. Air combat tactics, which means pilots inside those cockpits are focused on each other, not scanning the surrounding airspace for civilian traffic. You might have an F-16 going 500 knots in a 60-degree bank while you're cruising along in your Cessna 172 at 115 knots. They are not looking for you. You're not going to see them coming. Here's something I wish someone had told me when I was training. The word military in military operations area is not there for atmosphere. When fast movers are working that airspace, the closure time between one of them and your trainer is measured in fractions of a second. Traffic advisories help, but they are not separation. They are not a guarantee. So the real question is not, can I fly through a MOA? The real question is, how do I know if one is active? Let me walk through this together. Your sectional chart will show you the name of the MOA, the lateral boundaries, the altitude limits, and the scheduled times of use. Sometimes the schedule information appears right there on the chart, abbreviated to save space. Sometimes it refers you to the chart supplement, which used to be called the Airport Facility Directory, where the full schedule is published in plain language. Here is the critical thing about those published schedules. They represent normal operations. They are not real time. A MOA can be activated outside its published schedule if the military obtains a notice to air missions, what the FAA calls a NOTAM, extending or modifying that schedule. So the chart tells you what is normal, but normal and current are not always the same thing. That gap between the two is where pilot deviations happen. So how do you bridge that gap? Step 1. Call flight service before you depart. If you do not have the number memorized, it lives in your sectional legend and in every pre-flight weather app you have on your phone or tablet. When you call for your standard weather briefing, specifically request special use airspace status along your route. Give the briefer the name of the MOA and your planned transit time. A thorough briefer will cover it in a standard briefing, but ask directly, do not leave it to chance. Step 2. Pull your NOTAMs and actually read them. If there is a MOA activation outside the charted schedule, there will be a NOTAM for it. Your pre-flight apps will surface these, but you have to look at them. Make NOTAM review a non-negotiable step in your pre-flight process, not something you skim at the end of the weather package. Step 3. Contact the controlling agency directly. On your sectional near the MOA boundary, you will find a notation listing who controls that airspace. Often it is a military installation, sometimes there is a frequency listed. If you want the most current possible status, you can contact them directly before you depart or while you are en route. Step 4. Ask ATC when you are airborne. If you're flying with flight following from an Air Route Traffic Control Center, what the FAA calls an ARTCC, you can simply ask about MOA activity while you're in the air. They will often tell you the MOA is cold and you can proceed. Or they will give you traffic advisories while you transit. Either way, you're not flying uninformed. That fourth step matters more than students realize. Flight following is not just a radar service, it is a line of communication. Use it. Now here's a distinction your examiner will test on your oral. What happens to a pilot operating under instrument flight rules, an IFR pilot, when a MOA is active? When a MOA is active, ATC is required to separate IFR aircraft from that airspace. They will either vector the aircraft around the active MOA or keep them at an altitude above or below the active block. As an IFR pilot in the system, ATC carries that responsibility for you. As a VFR pilot, you are on your own unless you specifically request advisories, and advisory service is not separation. Advisory service is information. Keep that distinction sharp in your head, because it matters on your oral, and it matters when you're actually up there. Let me give you a scenario. You are a private pilot on a real cross-country trip. Your route takes you through a large MOA complex. The chart shows the MOA scheduled active Monday through Friday during daylight hours. It is a Tuesday afternoon. You figured the chart told you everything you needed, so you did not call flight service. What you do not know is that the military filed a NOTAM extending operations 2 days ago, and that extension is still active. You are flying into a hot MOA without knowing it. This is not a hypothetical. Pilot deviations involving special use airspace happen because pilots trust the published schedule without confirming current status. The NOTAM check exists exactly for this reason, and the consequences of a deviation in special use airspace are serious. We are talking possible certificate action and, more importantly, a real safety risk. The way out is simple, always confirm, always. Let me spend a minute on the altitude structure of MOAs, because this is a reliable source of confusion on oral exams. A MOA is not necessarily full column airspace. It might be charted from 4,000 feet mean sea level up to, but not including 18,000 feet, or from the surface to 10,000. Some MOA complexes have multiple altitude blocks with different schedules and sometimes different controlling agencies. The Powder River MOA complex in Montana and Wyoming covers an enormous area and is divided into multiple separate blocks with varying activation schedules and altitude limits. Knowing which block your planned altitude puts you in and whether that specific block is active is part of the homework. This matters on a practical level. If a MOA is charted from 8,000 feet mean sea level to flight level 180 and you are cruising at 4,500 feet, you are below that MOA laterally and vertically. The military activity above you is worth being aware of, but you are not inside the active airspace. Always check both the lateral boundary and the altitude limits, and remember that MOA altitudes are expressed in mean sea level, not above ground level. In mountainous terrain, that distinction changes the math considerably. A MOA floor at 6,000 feet mean sea level might only be 2,000 feet above terrain that sits at 4,000. Your actual separation from that floor is not what the chart number first suggests. There is one more nuance worth covering before we wrap up the technical side. When a MOA is charted as active but military operations temporarily pause, the controlling agency can release that airspace back to the National Airspace System. When a MOA is released, ATC treats it like normal airspace and can route traffic through it with appropriate separation. So, if you're on flight following and you ask about a MOA that is technically scheduled to be hot, the controller might tell you it has been released and you are clear to proceed. It happens more often than students expect. It is one more reason to be talking to ATC rather than making routing decisions in isolation. Now, let's connect all of this to what the Airman Certification Standards, or ACS, actually want from you on your private pilot check ride. The ACS requires you to demonstrate that you can identify the type and classification of special use airspace depicted on a sectional chart, explain the requirements for operating in or near each type, and make sound aeronautical decisions about routing based on what you find. On your oral, your examiner may pull out a sectional chart, point to a MOA or a restricted area, and ask you to walk through your thought process as pilot in command. They are not looking for a recited definition. They want the process. What type of airspace is this? What are the altitude limits? What are the published times? How do I determine if it is currently active? What are my options if it is? Walking through that sequence clearly and confidently will move you through that portion of the oral cleanly. The examiner is looking for a pilot who sees that airspace, understands it, and has already thought through the implications before they ever leave the ground. Show them that pilot. Let me leave you with one practical habit. Every time you plan a cross-country, whether it is a dual training flight, or a solo trip, or a real mission, make special use airspace a deliberate spoken-out-loud check. Not a glance at the sectional and an assumption that you are fine. Name the MOAs along your route. Check their altitude blocks, confirm their status with flight service or through your pre-flight tools. Know your alternate routing if any of them are active during your transit window. Doing it in training builds the habit. And the habit is what protects you when the flight itself gets busy and the checklist shortcuts start looking appealing. Do the work on the ground so the airspace is not a surprise in the air. Material for today comes from the FAA Aeronautical Information Manual and the Pilot's Handbook of Aeronautical Knowledge. Your VFR sectional chart legend is the fastest single reference for the special use airspace symbology. Find us at radiohanger.com. I'm Pattern. See you next time.